You're listening to Pod 4 Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Visit us online at pod4ham, that's the numeral 4, .com. Follow us on Twitter at pod4ham, or you can visit The Incomparable at theincomparable.com.
How long have you known?
A month or so.
Eliza, you should have told me.
I wrote to the general a month ago.
No.
I begged him to send you home.
You should have told me.
I'm not sorry.
Welcome back to Pod 4 Ham, the Incomparable Network's track-by-track saunter through the Hamilton cast album and the experience of the American musical itself. My name is Chip Sutterth.
I'm Sophie Brookover.
I'm Andy Notko.
I'm Orly Nativ.
And we are here to talk about That Would Be Enough. One of the casual, lazy shorthands about Hamilton is it is the hip-hop musical. But this is not a hip-hop song at all. This is a classic Broadway ballad between two lovers that are experiencing just a bit of a crisis. We've just come off of Hamilton being given his walking papers after a really bad managerial interview moment, and he comes back and he discovers that Eliza is with child, to his surprise, and we get a portrait of two characters who want very, very different things from their lives. Any opening thoughts about That Would Be Enough and where it hit you as you encountered either the musical itself or the cast album?
Probably that the song that precedes this is that big showdown between Hamilton and Washington, where it looks like Hamilton is about to actually take a swing at the $1 bill guy. So you're already starting to like maybe not like him a little bit and think of him as a hothead, and then you also kind of want to make Hamilton feel bad about himself with this song because now it's much more calm. But you have his wife saying, "I haven't seen you in a long time. Look, I'm pregnant. Look, can your world be just me and your family and our lives together? And is that okay? Will that be enough if you were just simply to live and hang on to like this wonderful life that we can start to build with each other?" And so it's, as I listen to the soundtrack, I keep sort of flip-flopping between, do I admire Hamilton or do I just wish he'd grow up already? So that's where That Would Be Enough is for me.
I really like how this song is sort of punctuates the cast recording at this point. We've come off of some like very raucous songs, and this one is really contemplative. And then, of course, having listened to it a zillion times, we know that, you know, the Battle of Yorktown, Guns and Ships, the Battle of Yorktown are coming. So it's sort of this like gentle interlude between those two like really big showstopper set pieces. And I think it's notable because it gives you this pause and it shows you what a good storyteller Eliza is. Like, I think that her ability to frame a story really started in Helpless. And she's already spinning ideas about, you know, how he could frame the narrative of his life differently if he were to make different, healthier, more mature choices. And of course, we see that like at the end of the show, like where that all goes, because she has the benefit of outliving him by 50 years. But I think it brings the sort of the tempo down, gives you a moment to breathe, and gives you space to rev up for the remainder of the act.
Orly, what about you? How does That Would Be Enough strike you?
I agree with it, kind of feeling like this acoustic reprieve, you know, musically, just to start with, and kind of get this breather in there. It's also sort of tracking the Eliza story through the musical. The difference between Eliza in Helpless and Eliza in That Would Be Enough, you know, she's grown up a lot in this moment. She kind of isn't just interested in him. She's interested in them, together, the family building that. And so she's come a long way, and she kind of has this way where she's looking to the future, and she's able to look at the future and just kind of presenting that to him. It's really beautiful. The song gets me in a lot of places for kind of that deep feeling of how you want to create your life with your partner and wanting them to get on board with that. And in her case, maybe coming up against her knowledge of his priorities being different than hers feels really poignant.
Something that you said there about Eliza being very different. I noticed, and of course, listening to the cast album, not having seen the musical at that point, you sort of miss the passage of time between Helpless and this song. In Helpless, 2 weeks later, I'm stressing, you know, she's cackling after Angelica suggests forming a harem, and she is calmer, slower, more mature, more reflective. It is a very different performance by Philippa Sue from the original cast. I'm fascinated by how simple her desires are, not simplistic, but, you know, she knows who she is, what she wants. And when Hamilton courted her in Helpless, he's like, you know, I don't have much. I've got a couple college credits and a top notch brain, and that's it. I can't offer you more. He's come so close to the brass ring, and now he's right back to the person who could have offered her so much more, and it's back to normal. Is he upset on her behalf, or is he upset on his behalf?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, he feels that he made a promise and he wants to fulfill it. And I think because they've been separated for so long, you know, even though they were both, you know, terrific letter writers, just wonderful correspondence with each other, you know, I think it makes sense that he would not have a complete sense of just how much she had taken that perspective on board and had made her peace with, you know, this life may be difficult. That's what we signed up for. We're doing this together.
She has a real sense of the reality of things, I think,
yeah,
in a way that he doesn't. You know, she doesn't need this legacy. She knows that money is an issue, but for her, the context, like, what is important is the future that they're building, is this kind of, she knows that it's a possibility he might not last out the war. She knows he's sort of an impetuous person. She has a sense that she wants to build something with this child and she wants him to be there. But I think there's also a kind of element of, you know, maybe he won't be, that is there.
The other cool things about it is that maybe it's just because I've been listening to this entire side of the album to get ready for this. But it does seem like musically this dovetails really nicely into the big, like, good, like the sort of romantic breakup song between Washington and Hamilton when Hamilton finds out that, hey, Jefferson has resigned. He's going to be running for president. And I, George Washington, are going to be retiring. And
well, there's something interesting there in the idea of him, Hamilton, being surrounded by people who have a sense of, you know, reality that does not dovetail with his own. His reality is always something that he is, you know, erasing and creating in his mind, and it's not necessarily true.
And it's interesting that he chose to surround himself with people and, like, really sort of stick it out with people who have that bigger picture mentality.
Yeah.
Like the Elizas and Washingtons of the world. I think they did their best to keep him grounded. You know, and at the same time, the nation needed somebody with this really bold imagination.
So Eliza asks him, you know, to look around, how lucky we are to be alive right now. It's a motif that's been picked up from the Schuyler sisters, only it's more inward looking. It's more familial. And it sort of runs up against what we learned about Hamilton in Satisfied, when Angelica sized him up, that he will never be satisfied. He is always reaching out for something more. And like Andy, like you said, Andy, this is kind of a point when you're sort of wanting Hamilton to sort of be a grown up and sort of accept his lot in life. Dare we say, wait for it.
But there's a lot of people who are trying to give him good advice. I was thinking about history has a size on you. This is the I was thinking about the lines where he says, this is the big song they have together before, right after the shouting match. There's a couple songs between that where he says, I was younger than you are now. When I was given my first command, I led my men straight into a massacre. I witnessed their deaths firsthand. I made every mistake. I felt the shame rise in me. And even now I lie awake knowing history has its eyes on me. And the entire song is him trying to let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control who lives, who dies, and who tells your story. And so here is the second person who's telling, in addition to Eliza, telling Hamilton, look, don't try to make your mark in this world. Just do the best, just make the best decisions you possibly can, because you really have no control over all that. Eliza here is, in this part, is interesting. I thought it was interesting where the song ends, this one, that would be enough. Oh, let me be a part of the narrative and the story we will write someday. Let this moment be the first chapter. And it's kind of interesting, given that on the actual second disc, she sings in Burn that, guess what? Okay, you cheated on me, and now I'm going to burn all of our letters. I'm going to take myself out of your story. No one will know what we talked about. No one will know if I forgave you or not. No one will know any of that. I'm unwriting myself from your story. So it just seems like this is it doesn't seem like there are two or three basic concepts that are running through almost every single song from track one to track 46, and that's definitely one of them.
Oh yeah, I mean, this almost sets up a scaffolding for the whole arc of their relationship, because she is presenting him a really mindful choice. And I keep thinking about mindfulness, the concept of just sort of being aware of where you are. Look around, you know. And as Hamilton will say later on, you know, he's got so much work to do. He's going to reject what Eliza's offering here. He's going to be nonstop, as they say.
And he also just doesn't get it that he's, you know, he's one who wants to make this world, who wants to create everything, but, and it does get repeated at him. I agree, and history has its eyes on you, you know, just a song and a half later, he's not the one that gets to write it. Other people are telling this story, other people are writing this, and Eliza's plea kind of at the end of the song, just let me be a part of the narrative, let me be a part of your story that you're not writing, you're just a part of it, you know, so could this be a moment in which we can make things different?
Like that line in 1776 where Ben Franklin and Adams at the end are arguing about allowing the Southern states to have slavery in order to get the Declaration of Independence ratified. And John is saying, if we do this, history will never forgive us. And then Franklin says, perhaps, but we'll never know. We'll be long gone.
Well, and isn't that a sentiment that we're seeing a lot now? You know, isn't this a sentiment that gets repeated again and again? You want to be on the right side of history, but you don't know who's going to be writing that.
Good point. Good point.
It seems very relevant.
Yeah. Now, something else, you know, something that gives me a twinge as I listen to this song, knowing what's coming in the story. And if this child shares a fraction of your smile or a fragment of your mind, look out, world. That would be enough. Oh, poor Eliza and Alexander.
Yeah, poor Philip.
Because that is exactly what they get.
Yeah, no, they get that dream child for sure. You know, by all accounts, he was brilliant. And I mean, I've seen his portrait. He was very handsome.
Oh, yeah.
They had incredibly high hopes for him. And it just all came to nothing.
In fact, because he has a fragment of Alexander's mind. And that's just, you know... Some of this stuff is just perfect drama, which has the additional benefit of having come from history itself. I also wanted to ask what you all think about the parallels between this song and It's Quiet Uptown, where Alexander repeats many of these entreaties.
Yes. Well, to me, what that shows, picking up that thread of mindfulness that you brought up earlier, it shows that he was paying attention. In this conversation, he couldn't really hear that message at the time, but he remembers it later when he really needs to. And I think that that's a huge part of what enables him and Eliza to reconcile. Do you guys agree?
I agree. I think he finally gets on the same page. You know, you could call it almost, if not too late, but there is that foreshadowing towards it. You know, that little musical quotation at the very end of That Would Be Enough that runs into It's Quiet Uptown, and you don't know where it's going, but it's awfully pretty the first time you hear it, and then the second time, and the third, and the other time through after getting through it, it's just gutting because you know what's coming, and it's just this little brush of the leitmotif at the end.
I know there's no replacing what we've lost and you need time, but I'm not afraid. I know who I've married. Just let me stay here by your side. That would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, that's such a human moment because after going through the tragedy of A, almost losing his entire family and then actually losing his son, sometimes the world just has to drop that huge brick on your head. And then you got to be on your butt on the ground before you realize that, oh, okay, now I get it. That perhaps I should actually be concerned about what today is going to be and what tomorrow is going to be. And in doing so, I kind of forgot how much I enjoy the history of yesterday as opposed to the history of tomorrow written about 20 years from now.
Mm. I also noticed that, you know, this is the second time that we've used the look around motif in the musical. She does it with her sisters, just sort of commenting on the world around them and the Scholar Sisters. Here she's making a very sincere entreaty to Alexander, who in nonstop just sort of throws the line back into her face in arguing for the exact opposite. Look around how lucky we are to be alive right now. I've got to make the most of it. I've got to go to New York and be a Secretary of the Treasury and all this stuff, which is seriously not what she wants. So I like that the themes that are set up in this song, he uses them against her in nonstop and then finally gets the message in It's Quiet Uptown. This is a really, really rich song. I don't have a whole lot of Broadway musical background. How does this compare to other great musicals? These sort of, it's not exactly a showstopper, but it is a powerful ballad by Philippa Sue in this musical.
What's wonderful, I think, about this ballad from, you know, a more musical theater context is that it's a powerful ballad in as much of its moment and its meaning and its depth and its characterization, but it's not a big howling, you know, belt at the end ballad. It ends on such a beautiful kind of, it has a quiet strength in it, and that I think is rather different for kind of this big moment in the show, is not this kind of belting ballad. It has an intimacy to it through the entire song, and I think that that's very appealing. There was a little note in one of the Genius annotations citing The Last 5 Years, which is a musical I love deeply, and theirs in their song, I'm a part of that in The Last 5 Years. It's sort of the same sentiment of a woman recognizing that her partner is this kind of big creative type A personality and wanting to be in that moment, wanting to be a part of things. There's kind of feels like a reference back and forth with that world you keep erasing and creating in your mind. So I see that in there. And that song in The Last 5 Years is also a very kind of intimate in the home moment. So that feels like a context. And then there's a little musical quotation at the end of Say No to This from The Last 5 Years that's very direct and overt and feels the same way, like they're referencing one another in this moment of betrayal that goes back to the same moment of intimacy missed. So on a Broadway level, there's something kind of beautiful in this moment being just as close within itself as it is while being so meaningful that we know later on is just totally shattered.
You got to turn the volume down at some point. If given that what happens next is going to be is the election of 1800, and here is now we push over the first domino that leads to the duel, And so sometimes you really do need to do that sort of thing with the audience, that give them a couple of minutes to just collect their thoughts, give them a slow number that lets them really take in everything that's happened in the past 2 hours before you set up, okay, now here's where he starts to fall off the cliff. This is the gun that we set on the table in the opening number. This is where it gets picked up, loaded, and then fired.
Any closing thoughts on that would be enough, or has this been enough?
It's never enough.
I will observe that at the end of this song on the stage, a visibly humbled Alexander Hamilton kisses Eliza's hand, and it looks like if he hadn't received the dispatch calling him back into action, that maybe, just maybe, he could have made this work, but then we wouldn't have history and we wouldn't have this musical.
One thing that I'd like to poll the panel for, I thought it was a really cool moment in that big showdown between Washington and Hamilton, where Washington ends the argument by saying, "Go home." And in that song, you feel as though, oh, God, this was it. Hamilton just so totally overstepped his bounds and so totally lost control. This is everything that is wrong with Alexander Hamilton. And Washington himself has now said, go away. You're more helpful to me if you're not here right now. And then now, two songs later, we find out that Eliza actually got in touch with, sent a letter to Washington saying, "Hey, I'm pregnant, by the way." Did that kind of make you rethink like the reasons why Washington said go home now?
I think he'd have done it anyway.
Yeah, and I also think it's pretty clear from Meet Me Inside that Washington is trying to say one thing to Hamilton, and Hamilton is hearing a completely different thing. Like, Washington is trying to say, "We need you alive. You being dead is of no use to me."
And just when stay he's, alive.
Yeah, so you have got to stay alive. Your wife needs you alive, son. Like, I think that because this song immediately follows Meet Me Inside, it becomes very clear at once that Washington, you know, he had, not only did he think Hamilton acted like a jerk and totally inappropriately, but also he has more context. He knows things that Hamilton doesn't know.
They do have his best interests at heart. He just doesn't.
Right.
That's right. I think at the end of this song, you begin to realize that the wisest character in this musical is not Alexander Hamilton, certainly not Aaron Burr, and it's not even Angelica Schuyler. It's Eliza. I think she is easily the wisest character in the musical. And this is a great showpiece for the character and for Philippa Sue on the original cast. Well, I think this is a good place to wrap up this track. That would be enough. Next time, a new Pod for Ham panel is going to be tackling the fastest 2 minutes in American musical theater with David Diggs's Tour de Force and Guns and Ships. I hope that's going to be the sort of podcast that you'd want to listen at 1.5x or 2x speed, I think, just to get the full image of it.
Yeah.
But we are your panel for Pod for Ham. That would be enough. I'm Chip Sutterth for Sophie Bookover, Andy Anatko, and Orly Nativ. Thank you so much for listening. This panel will be back later on, but for now, give yourself a week and get ready for Guns and Ships. Thanks for listening.
If you could let me inside your heart, oh, let me be a part of the narrative in the story they will write someday. Let this moment be the first chapter where you decide to stay. And I could be enough. Be enough. That would be enough.